Hi, let's turn over to Genesis chapter 29, I think is where we left off last week. I'm not going to play catch up. We're just going to take this one chapter at a time and see how far we can get. Jacob, at this point, you remember, he had conned his brother Esau initially of the birthright and then conned his dad Isaac to give him Esau's blessing. And by this time, Esau was fed up with him and was going to kill him. And so about that time, his mom decided it'd be a good time for you to go look for a wife somewhere else. And Isaac said the same. And so he's heading off to where his mom came from, Haran, and going to find a wife. And so it says that he went on his journey and came to the land of the people of the east, which was actually not where Haran is, but that was a place that was on the way. And he proceeded forth and he looked and he saw a well in the field. And behold, it was kind of surprised. The first place he came to in this area, there was three flocks of sheep lying by it. This was in the morning. Normally you wouldn't be feeding sheep in the morning. They would be out grazing. But they were there. And it says, for out of that well they watered the flocks. And a large stone was on the well's mouth. This indicates that it was not a freshwater, living water well, as they talked, where the water was coming up from the ground. But it was a cistern where they stored water. That's why they would put a rock over the top. They'd put a big boulder over it so that somebody couldn't come along and steal the water. And so there was a stone on the mouth, and it says that all the flocks would be gathered there, and they would roll the stone from the well's mouth, water the sheep, and put the stone back in its place on the well's mouth. The idea is it would take several people to move the stone, and that was kind of their version of a padlock. And Jacob said to them, my brethren, where are you from? And they said, we're from Haran. And he was really surprised because that's where his mom was from. And he said to them, do you know Laban, the son of Nahor? Now, Laban actually was the grandson of Nahor, but Nahor was the guy that would be famous around there. And that's why he used that phrase. And they said, yeah, we know him. And he said to them, is he well? How's he doing? And they said, yeah, he's well. And look, his daughter Rachel is coming with his sheep. And so she was off in the distance, and they knew that Rachel was going to come. And so he said, look, it's still high day. In other words, it's still in the morning. That was a phrase that they would use to indicate there's a whole lot of the day left. And he said, isn't it time for the cattle to be gathered together? Water the sheep and go and feed them. He said, hey, if you're sitting here by the well, don't wait around all day. You know, water the sheep, and then you can go and have the whole day for them to eat. And but they said, we can't until all the flocks are gathered together and they've rolled the stone from the well's mouth. And then we water the sheep. Now, while he was still speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. And it came to pass when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, he was obviously pretty surprised that there they were right then. And it says, Jacob went near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. Then it says he kissed Rachel and lifted up his voice and wept, and they began to have a conversation. It sounds kind of funny that there were three flocks there already, and they were saying, we can't move the rock. We got to wait till everyone's here and we'll all do it together. The fact that Rachel came and her job was tending the sheep also, it's possible that these guys that he was talking to earlier were young boys who wouldn't be strong enough. At any rate, he gets so psyched up when he sees Rachel that I don't know if he wanted to show off. I don't know if his adrenaline got pumping. Remember, this is Jacob. This isn't Esau. He's not, you know, a real buffed guy. But somehow he got so pumped that he got up himself. And we don't know if maybe when he goes, come on, guys, let's do it. And maybe they all chipped in and helped move it or something. But Jacob was the kind of guy who would cut through the, you know, bureaucracy and just go, come on, he's going to impress this gal. And he goes, we'll get this done now. I don't care what your traditions are. I don't care how you usually do it. I'm a guy that gets things done and I'm going to do it right now. And so he just went into action and then watered the sheep. He may have been trying to ask these guys, what are you hanging around for? Because he was hoping, you know, he knew Rachel was coming and he was hoping to kind of have some time with her to himself. You know how that goes, guys? You know, it seems like when you're trying to make a move on somebody, there's always other people around wasting your time and making small talk. And so, you know, you're just going, why don't you guys leave? And so it was probably a combination of all of those things. And so they went ahead and he watered the sheep. And he began to talk. He kissed her. right off the bat, that was pretty nervy, but really in their society, that was just kind of a greeting. Laban kisses him when he sees him. Esau kisses him when he sees him later. So don't think he took her in his arms and big dip or something and started smooching on her. It was just like a greeting of, hey, we're relatives, kissing cousins. And so it says, then he lifted up his voice and wept. At this point, he was probably, you know, he had been cut off from his family. Now realize his mom, Rebecca, had come from here, but it had been probably 100 years since she left home. And so they didn't really know him very well. They weren't having family reunions. They weren't the type of family. When you have relatives like Laban, you really go and visit them as seldom as you can. He's the kind of person that you would only hang out with because he was your relative. You would never choose him as a friend. And so he wasn't close to them, but at least they were relatives. And he was probably getting really homesick because here he had left his family and figured he may never get to go back. So here he's out in the middle of the desert, a strange area, and now here's somebody who's flesh and blood, who's a real relative. And he was just moved, probably crying because he missed home. He was like 77 years old and he had never been away from his mom. And so here it's just like, here's somebody soft to hug, and it just moved him. And, you know, if you've been away for a while, you know how sometimes that can happen. And so he wept. And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's relative and that he was Rebekah's son. And so she ran and told her dad. Laban, always the opportunist, got excited. Here's a potential person for me to take advantage of, because he was the con man of all con men. And it says he heard the report about Jacob, his sister's son, and he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house. And so he filled Laban in on everything that had happened. Jacob kind of, boy, Uncle Laban, I've got myself into a jam. And, you know, he told him probably how he tricked his brother and how he tricked his dad. And Laban's going, you're my kind of guy. I like this. And so Laban really took a liking to him. And Laban said, surely you're my bone and my flesh. You know, the fruit doesn't fall far from the tree, buddy. You're like me. You know, you conned yourself into this mess. And, you know, all you need is a little con man graduate school. I'll finish it off for you. And so Laban said, you know, hey, just stay at my house. And so he hung out for about a month, and he was probably working, didn't have anything else to do. And after a month's time of no one really talking about what his plans were or that he wanted to get married or anything like that, or maybe he had shared with Laban that I'm hoping to find a wife somewhere. Then Laban in verse 15 said, you know, because you're my relative, I don't want you to serve me for nothing. What do you want me to pay you? Now, Laban was pretty smart because, for one thing, he liked to have the upper hand. And so here, even if Jacob was kind of helping him out, maybe he wasn't working that hard. Maybe he was. But if he saw the productivity, Laban's thinking, how can I get you under contract? He's going, I don't know how long you're going to stay here. So here's this guy. And, you know, if you run a business, you realize you'd rather have a good employee under contract and have to pay him a little more than to have a good employee who's working for nothing or for peanuts, and you know he could leave at any time. And so that's kind of what was happening here. And he's going, look, let's make a deal here. What do you want? Just name it. Name your price. And so Laban had two daughters, it says. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel, who we met already. And it says in New King James, Leah's eyes were delicate. Literally, it means they were weak. But Rachel was beautiful of form and appearance. Basically, Leah was ugly. It was a nice way of saying, you know, about all they would see of the gals would be their eyes in those days. And I don't know, sometimes you see some of these Middle Eastern gals and all you can see is their eyes, but they have those big, beautiful almond eyes that sparkle. And that's what they were looking for. And that was Rachel. She was beautiful. The name Rachel means like a little lamb. The name Leah, it means, wild cow. Kind of like, you know, a beautiful little lamb and the mad cow disease. That was, and so she was a dog. Okay. But so Jacob, it says, loved Rachel. You know, isn't that the way it is? The pretty people, you know, they get it all. us ugly people. No, I was blessed with a beautiful wife. So, you know, sometimes even some of us get lucky sometimes. But it says Jacob loved Rachel. So he said, tell you what, I'll work for you for 7 years just for Rachel, your younger daughter. He makes this deal. In those days, what you would pay as a, you know, and a lot of people misunderstand the whole dowry thing. And, you know, you pay a dowry to get a woman and you think like it's buying the girl. That really isn't the idea. It's more of a token thing to show that you're respectable, to show that you're going to be able to support her. That's the idea. In those days, a decent dowry for a beautiful girl would be like a year's wages. So he's really getting carried away here. You know, love has gone to his head and he's going, 7 years, I'll work for her for 7 years. Laban, you know, doesn't say, oh no, that would be too much. He goes, hey, that's fine. Yeah, go ahead. And so Laban said, yeah, better that I give her to you than to some stranger. So yeah, stay with me. So in verse 20, this is a really cute verse. It says, Jacob served 7 years for Rachel and they seemed only a few days to him because of the love he had for her. You know, that first love, that first crush, when you're just completely smitten by someone, the time can just fly. You know, you're sitting there talking and, I mean, you can be talking with anyone else and after 15 minutes you're going, when is this going to get? You can be sitting in church going, come on, let's move, let's see how many. But you're sitting there with someone you love and hours just seem like minutes. They just seem to fly by. Next thing you know, there are some old songs like Wake Up Little Susie, you know, and some of those where it's like, oh man, the time just got away. Or what was that? Ricky Nelson had that one song about, I can't remember what it was, but you know, the idea of, oh no, I thought it was just a little while. The movies are much. No, that's still Wake Up Little Susie. So anyhow, this is going to be indescribable on the tape, but it just flew by. He was like, guys, 7 years seems like nothing. You know, remember how guys, when you're first in love with someone, you talk about, and sometimes you'll go just way out of your way in order to just be with the one you love. Miles and miles, seems like nothing. Oh, I'll offer to take you here. I'll drive you there. I'll do this. I'll do that. You know, I remember one time my wife's sister was going up to Bible college. And I said, oh, let me take you up there. You know, and so it would be a chance for me to be alone with Ann as soon as we dumped her sister off. And so, you know, it was like, it was nothing. It's this drive all the way up there. But it flew by. And then we went and just sat in the car and I sang songs to her and everything. And we got home really, really late, but it just seemed like a few minutes. Now, if I'm on my way home and she calls me on my cell phone and says, Dave, do you think you could pick up a gallon of milk on the way home? I go, oh, that's like 10 minutes out of my way. How can I do that? It's funny the way that happens. You know, your engagement just seems like a flash. Marriage just lasts forever. And I mean that in a good way. So he works 7 years and he goes, man, I can't even believe the 7 years is over. This was nothing for a wonderful girl like this. And so he comes to Laban and he goes, by the way, it's been 7 years. He said, served 7 years for Rachel, seemed only a few days because of the love he had for her. Then Jacob said to Laban, give me my wife. My days are fulfilled that I may go into her. I don't know why after 7 years, maybe, you know, 6 years into it, it just seems like a long ways off. But all of a sudden, now it's time. Now it's like, hey, it's my wedding day. Now let's get down to it. And that's kind of what he was doing. Kind of a weird thing to say to a father-in-law, but, you know, that's what he said. And Laban gathered together all the men of the place and made a big feast. And it came to pass in the evening that he took Leah, the mad cow, his daughter, and brought her to Jacob. And he went into her. He's like, this guy's always thinking. I love this. He gets a big party and everybody's all getting kind of probably intoxicated. It's dark. The only way Leah's going to look good is in the dark, even with a veil and everything on. It's like, you know, she needed the extra help of, you know, no sunlight. And so there she is. Jacob's all so excited, thinking it's Rachel. He goes in with her. And then one of my Bible teachers said, this is the saddest verse in the Bible. So it came to pass in the morning that, behold, it was Leah. Oh. Imagine waking up and there she is, the ugly sister. And I worked 7 years for this. What am I going to do now? A lot of people have made the point. And he goes, whoa, what have you done to me? Wasn't it for Rachel that I served you? Why did you deceive me? Now, interesting, the little con man, the guy who's deceived his way all the way through his life, is now going, how could you fool me like this? You know, I trusted you. You know, just a silly kind of surprise at someone else doing the very thing that he himself had done. And, you know, a lot of people have made jokes about the fact that a lot of people married Rachel and woke up later and found out they married Leah. But whoever you are, you don't stay that way. And marriage is something that's based on a commitment. And as a result, he did this. And yes, he was fooled. Maybe he could have got it annulled. But understand that if he had just dumped Leah at this point, it would have made her a disgrace. It would have made her unmarriable, as if her looks didn't make her unmarriageable already. And so very kindly, he doesn't end up chucking her out. But it goes on to say that he said, what are you doing? And Laban comes up with this custom that they have. He said in verse 26, oh, I thought I mentioned to you, it must not be done so in our country to give up the younger before the firstborn. Fulfill her week, you know, finish your honeymoon, and we'll give you this one also for the service which you'll serve me for still another 7 years. Oh, sorry, it's a big misunderstanding, Jacob. Now, I would feel really sorry for Jacob if we didn't already know how much of a con man he was, how sneaky he was. And now they con each other back and forth. I mean, these guys have a great time. These guys are cut out of the same cloth. They're the same kind of guys. But here they are. And now he says, oh, we have a custom. Now, in 7 years, he would have heard this custom. Certainly when he came to his wedding, somebody should have told him, you're going to get the older sister, the ugly one, instead of Rachel. But what's happening here is something that we see happen in life all the time. And it's called the law of retribution, or what goes around comes around. It's what Jesus talked about when he said, don't be deceived. God isn't mocked. Whatsoever a man soweth, that will he also reap. And it's amazing how often in our lives we find that those seeds that we sow end up coming back to us because God wants to teach us lessons, and the best way we learn them are about ourselves, because we don't forget about ourselves. We can forget about everything else, but we remember what we experience, what we feel, what we go through. And so for God to teach us a lesson, often he plays these tricks on us where something turns around drastically. And that which we used to dish out, now we have to find out what it is to take it. And so remember how the whole thing started with Jacob and Esau was a question of, hey, wait, the older is supposed to go first. And Jacob circumvented that twice in order to get what he wanted. And even though that was what God was going to do, God would have had a better way of doing it. He didn't need to use lying and cheating because of it. But what happens is, he brings Jacob into the same type of situation and he says, you need to learn a lesson about olders and youngers and tradition. Now, how does this feel? How does this feel to get ripped off for 7 years' work, end up with an ugly wife, finally have to work another 7 years really to pay off the one you wanted in the first place? And then as we read on, life was miserable. Bigamy is just ridiculous. God intended always one man, one woman to be married for the rest of their lives. And anything else is horrible. Anything else is awful. Now, sometimes you may have no choice in terms of, you know, something happens to you and you find yourself in a situation where either a spouse has died or they've left you or whatever. But always what God intended was two people to get married and stay married for the rest of their lives. And here, we see as a result of this sneakiness, we're going to see in the next couple chapters, just it really doesn't turn out very well because these women are in competition constantly and it starts here. But always what you dish out, often it's going to come back to you. The Bible says that the measure by which you judge others is the measure by which you yourself will be judged, Jesus said. And so it does work that way. And don't be fooled. Don't think that you can get away with being a certain way and you're not going to have to learn that lesson on the other side. It's not like karma, and God has grace. I don't want to scare you into thinking everything you've done, it's always going to happen to you. But there are some things that we do that we need to learn about. And so as a result, they get turned around and they're right in our face. I think of the horrible kid I was all the way through school, and I just gave them fits. And so as soon as I finished school, I ended up being in charge of a school, dealing with kids who gave me fits. And it wasn't easy at first. It took me years, frankly, to really figure out how to discipline somebody in love. At first, I was really angry with these kids when they would do bad things. I'll never forget one kid, Steve Pellerin. He had ditched school and he went and shot a gun in somebody's garage and it went through a wall and almost hit a woman. And his parents didn't really discipline him much. And I called them up and I said, "You've got to get a handle on this kid." And they said, "Hey, if you want to discipline, you can discipline him." And I said, "Okay, I will." And I brought him and the other kid who were with him into the office. And I was so mad. I was scared for him, for how stupid he was and what he could have done, the damage that he could have done. I was angry with his parents for not disciplining him. And at the time, I didn't have kids, so I had all the answers about kids. And so it's like, I'm going to swat him. Somebody had given me an oar. I sure hope the statute of limitations has run out on this. But someone had given me an oar just as a joke. And I had had it in my office, and I would pretend like I was going to spank kids with it, never used it. But I thought, you know, this is the time. And so Steve Pellerin put his hands on the desk and bent over. And I thought, I'm going to send him a message he's never going to forget. And I took a full-on baseball swing with that oar to his rear. And he moved a lot more than I thought. He was a decent-sized kid, eighth grader. But I mean, it lifted him up off the ground. He flew over the desk. He spun in midair. He crashed into the window. And the mini blinds fell off and went over his head. And I was sitting here holding this oar and I just started shaking. And the vice principal was in there as a witness. He was just going, huh. And the other kid who was waiting for his SWAT just went, woo, 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 and just started crying. And it hit me at that point, you know. This got out of control, you know, and it was a really stupid thing to do. I apologized to Steve years later when I ran into him. I told him, "You could have sued me," and he goes, "Yeah, you know, I deserved it, and it helped me out and everything." So there's a happy ending to the story, I think. Never used the oar on anybody again, but, you know, often God will put us in situations where we are actually paying for what we dished out ourselves, because a lot of times we can't see ourselves because we're so unbiased. So God puts us in a situation where we have to deal with someone who's just like us. And then we start to see what it looks like and how despicable it is. We start to understand. And a lot of times it's going to be God will give you a kid who's a lot like you. And then are you going to be a phony? Are you going to pretend like you can't possibly understand? How could someone do something so stupid when in the back of your mind you're going, "Yeah, I remember when I did this." And a lot worse. When Ann and I first got married one time, we were trying to sleep one night and there were a bunch of kids out in the street making a bunch of noise late at night, just yelling and obscenities and everything. And Ann wanted to call the police. And I said, "Ann, just leave them alone. Trust me, we're paying for what I did when I was a kid." I could picture myself out there. How many people had to call the police because of me being rowdy? And I just go, "Let's just pay the price for this one. Just let it go and it'll be okay." But God has a way of doing that. He has a way of things coming back around. And it certainly happened here. One of my favorite times where it happens, and we'll be lucky to get through one chapter at this rate. But remember when Haman, in the book of Esther, he really wanted to get these Jews. And he really wanted to promote himself. And he ends up, you know, everything he did backfired on him. And then finally, at the end, he had built a gallows and he ended up being hung on his own gallows. And be careful, because if you go into the business of building gallows, if you're in the business of trying to shaft people, if you're in the business of trying to bring people to pay the price for their sin, be careful, because all that comes back around. All of that can come back to haunt you. Because God wants you to learn to be like Him. And that is gracious. That isn't, I can't wait to stop this person for what they've done. That is being long-suffering. And if we become short-suffering, if we become people with quick triggers, oh man, I can't wait till your kids start growing up, because you're going to find out what it's like. It's going to all come back to you. And finally, when you see it in others, you'll begin to see it in yourself. And that's kind of what happens here. So anyhow, where were we? He goes ahead and he ends up with both wives. And each girl also got a maid given to them as kind of a servant. And they both come in the next chapter. Jacob also went into Rachel. And he also loved Rachel more than Leah. And he served with Laban still another 7 years. I feel sorry for Leah. Because here she was growing up, not that desirable. Guy's not interested in her. Everyone thought, you're never going to get married. They compared her to her cute sister and all. And then finally, the only way she gets married is by her dad pulling off a con job. And then she gets married, but now here's her sister. You know, you see sibling rivalry. Imagine two sisters married to the same guy and competing. It would be ugly. And yet it was obvious that Rachel was his favorite. And it was obvious that Leah wasn't. But interesting, we don't have a lot of insight about their relationship. But we see a couple of how God did bless Leah. But another little footnote that you'll notice later. When Jacob finally was buried with his family, Abraham and Sarah were buried there. Isaac and Rebekah were buried there. Jacob and Rachel? No, Leah. When it came down to it, he honored Leah because she was a faithful wife to him, because she served him, and he began to appreciate more than just the looks of first love, the attraction of that which is physical. And he finally appreciated the character of Leah so much that when he died, he wanted to be buried next to her. He wanted her to be the one. And I think that's interesting. And, you know, for us, sometimes you end up marrying someone, guys or girls, you know, you marry someone and you see them as being one way. And over the years, sometimes they become less that way and you can't make them be what they're supposed to be. And reality starts to set in and it becomes more difficult. But, you know, when all is said and done, when you live your life with God blessing your family the way that He wants to, you will always end up appreciating the character. You'll always end up appreciating the mature one. The men who dump their wives, trade in a 40 for 220s, they're so stupid. That's such a dumb thing to do, because as women mature, they're just growing into who they really are. If your wife is just in her 30s or even in her 40s, you haven't even totally got to know her in terms of potential, in terms of what God is going to do. But the beauty that increases, that becomes more than skin deep, the beauty that becomes real. In the case of him, Rachel, yeah, she was a good-looking gal. But when she died, she was buried off in the middle of the desert. But Leah ultimately was the one that he ended up having that respect for. And ironically, and we're going to see later, the promise of the Messiah. And we know all about Joseph. We're going to end up reading about Joseph for almost the rest of Genesis. And so sometimes we stop and think that, yeah, you know, Joseph was Rachel's son, right? And yeah, Benjamin was Rachel's son. Yeah. But where did the Messiah come from? Was Jesus born? Was David born through the line of Joseph? No. Was Rachel his ancestor? No. It was through Judah, the son of Leah, that the promise was fulfilled. And if we don't even get that far tonight, I'm going to tell you something. He would have been better off sticking with Leah. By Leah's fourth boy, Judah, he was going to fulfill everything that God really wanted to do. Now, God blessed all of the other kids, and they all, for all of eternity, make up the nation of Israel. But the real blessing came through the wild cow. You know, the one that men looked at and thought, she's nothing. The one that ultimately bore from her own body. The one who would, you know, who the Messiah, who would be called the Lion of the tribe of Judah. And, you know, when you think about it, look over in Isaiah 53 sometime where it talks about Jesus and the whole story of the gospel. And it begins by saying, who hath believed our report, and to whom is the arm of the Lord revealed? He will grow up before him as a tender plant, a root out of the dry ground. He has no form or comeliness. When we see him, there is no beauty that we would desire him. He was despised and rejected of men. Hey, there's hope. There's hope for people who don't bear all of the marks that the world says are beautiful. Satan, an angel of light, a beautiful thing. Jesus, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. One that we looked on him and we thought, he's not much. So take heart. Beauty is way more than skin deep. And when it comes to the Lord's perspective, man looks on the outward appearance, but God looks on the heart. And not only is that comforting to us ugly people, but it's also something that lets us realize, how much time do we want to spend primping the outside? And how much time do we want to spend developing the inward character that ultimately is what beauty is all about, that ultimately is what pleases God? And so that's my little deal on ugly girls. It says the Lord saw that Leah was unloved, literally hated. Every time he looked at Leah, he remembered Laban. She probably looked like Laban. But every time he looked at her, it was like, man, I can't believe 7 years, I didn't even want her, now I have two wives. So even though he was looking at her as someone he hated, God looked at her and saw someone that he loved. And so the first child was given. Rachel was barren, it said, but he opened the womb of Leah. And Leah conceived and bore a son, and she called his name Reuben. Reuben was the oldest son, and she said, the Lord has surely looked on my affliction. Now, therefore, my husband will love me. She figured, boy, now that I've given him a son, finally, maybe I'll have some kind of a chance. Maybe things will turn. And so she named him Reuben. Literally, it means, see, a son. Hey, look at this. Hey, Rachel, where's yours? Here's ours. What do you think? She was excited. Apparently, it didn't really do much. And so it says she conceived again and bore a son. And she says, because the Lord has heard that I am unloved, he has therefore given me this son also. And she called his name Simeon. And Simeon means heard. She's going, yeah, God's hearing me. He's blessing me. She conceived again and bore a son and said, now, this time my husband will become attached to me, will bond, because I have borne him three sons. Therefore, his name was called Levi. Levi means bonded or attached. Of course, the whole priestly line came through Levi. And then she conceived again and bore a son and said, now I will praise the Lord. Therefore, she called his name Judah, and then she stopped bearing. It was like, okay, we finished. She goes, praise God. I've got all these boys, and maybe in some way God let her know, this is the one. We've been talking about how through him, all the nations of the world are going to be blessed. The solution to the problem of evil, it's going to come in a form of a son. And this is it. And she just goes, oh, praise God. Now, when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister and said to Jacob, give me children or else I die. Now, she's the cute little sister, you know, spoiled brat. She's coming to her husband. The poor guy's in his late 80s, at least, or in his late 70s, early 80s. And she's going, wait a minute, give me a son. And he's going, wait, I'm doing my part. What am I supposed to do? He got kind of bugged at her. And he said his anger was aroused against Rachel. And he said, am I in the place of God who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb? So she said, look, here's my maid, Bilhah. Go into her. She'll bear a child. I'll adopt it. And that'll be fine. So Jacob, always trying to please his wife, took Bilhah as wife, and she conceived and bore Jacob a son. And Rachel said, God has judged my case, and he's also heard my voice and given me a son. So she named him Dan, which means judge. Rachel's maid Bilhah conceived again. Seems like these things ran in streaks, and she was hot this time and bore Jacob a second son. And Rachel said, with great wrestlings I have wrestled with my sister, and indeed I have prevailed. So she called his name Naphtali, which means, you know, wrestling, and my wrestling. And then Leah saw that she had stopped bearing. When Leah saw that she had stopped bearing, she took Zilpah, her maid, and goes, here, Zilpah, you go have some kids and they'll be ours. And so again, Jacob's, okay, I'm in my 80s, but I'll
try to do whatever I can pull off here. And Zilpah had a son. And Leah said, a troop comes. And she called his name Gad, which means like, yeah, there's a bunch of them. And Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a second son. And Leah said, I'm happy, for the daughters will call me blessed. So she called his name Asher. And the name Asher means happy. They're running out of names. They're starting to name them after the seven dwarfs. Now, Reuben went into the days of, and this is kind of a weird story. Little Reuben, who was probably about 4 years old at the time, went out in the wheat harvest and found some mandrakes in the field and brought them to his mother Leah. Mandrakes were these little plants that they thought superstitiously would make you fertile and were kind of an aphrodisiac. And so a little four-year-old comes in with him, and Rachel's going, I want some of those. Give me those mandrakes. Leah said, yeah, you know, is there a small deal that you've already taken away my husband? You want to take away my son's mandrakes also? And Rachel said, okay, look, tell you what. Jacob likes me better. Give me the mandrakes and you can go spend the night, you know, with Jacob. Go ahead. It's my turn, but you can have at it. And so Jacob came out of the field, the poor guy, working all day, comes home at night, and Leah's going, I bought you. Come on, we're going to bed right now. I've surely hired you with my son's mandrakes. And so he laid with her that night, and God listened to Leah, and she conceived and bore Jacob a fifth son by her. She said, God has given me my wages because I've given my maid to my husband. And so she called his name Issachar, which means wages. Imagine having a name wages, and then people going, that's an interesting name. How'd you get that? Oh, man, it's a long story. You don't even want to hear it. And then Leah conceived again and bore Jacob a sixth son. And Leah said, God has endowed me with a good endowment. Now my husband will dwell with me. He'll be at home with me. He'll favor me because I've borne him six sons. And so she called his name Zebulon, which means dwelling. It's like, yeah, we're finally there. We're at home. And then she had a daughter, Dinah. They probably had other daughters. They usually didn't keep track of the girls, but later it alludes to a bunch of girls. But Dinah has a whole story about her, a whole chapter and a couple chapters, and so that's why she's mentioned. God remembered Rachel, and God listened to her, and he opened her womb, and she conceived, and she said, God has taken away my reproach. So she called his name Joseph and said, the Lord shall add to me another son. Joseph means like added on to. And she's going, yeah, this is nothing. I'm going to actually have another one. This makes 11 sons for Jacob. If you look over at chapter 35, there's a quick list of them. So you can't tell the players without a program. You can refer over to there, and it gives a real quick list of which maid, which wife had which son. And so Joseph was born the 11th son. Rachel ends up, Jacob ends up having one more son, Benjamin, that we read about later. At this point, Joseph is the youngest, the 11th. Benjamin, when he's born, Rachel dies in childbirth. I hate to spoil it for you. It's coming in a few chapters. But so at this point here, he's got 11. Well, yeah, it was at least 12 kids, but 11 little boys, all under the age of 13. And things are kind of heating up. But Jacob makes an agreement with Laban. He goes and says to him, look, I need to go to my own place. And Laban's saying, come on, my grandkids are all around me. I want you to be here. I want you here. And he goes, I'll make a deal with you. And we find out later that Laban changed his wages, you know, time after time after time after time. But here he's asking for a deal. And he says, look, name your wages and I'll give it. I've heard that before. And Jacob said to him, you know how I've served you and your livestock have been with me. And when I came here, you just had this little herd and I've worked hard and it's really been blessed. So he says, okay, what do you want me to give you? And Jacob said, don't give me anything, but tell you what, I'll just keep taking care of your flocks. But let me go through the flock today and remove all the speckled and spotted sheep and all the brown ones among the lambs and the spotted and speckled among the goats. And these shall be my wages. He says, look, how about when the animals are born, if they're multicolored, I get them. And if they're solid colored, you get them. And a lot more of them are going to be solid colored. But now you can't accuse me of ripping you off, because if it's a speckled one and I have it, you remember, that's the deal we made. And so Laban said, hey, great idea. But then Laban, again, he's always a step ahead. As we read here, he goes ahead and collects all the multicolored ones and he moves them like 3 miles away and has his sons guard them. That way, Jacob can't be breeding these things, and it's going to be a real fluke if you take two solid colored animals and they have a speckled one.
So Laban thought he was really pulling off a con here. And he kind of was. He really went back on the deal that he had made. He tried to go back on the deal. And you end up having this weird story, and we don't have time to read through it. I see it's getting late, so we're about done here. I can't believe we just got through two chapters. But Jacob does this weird thing where he takes these sticks and he peels part of them off like a candy cane, and he makes some of them speckled, and he sticks them in front of the animals when they're conceiving. And then, lo and behold, they end up having a lot more speckled babies. And people have looked at this passage and they say, you know, what was going on here? Is this some sort of genetic engineering? You know, they've done experiments with animals to where in front of them there's a spotted stick when they conceive, and see if they have more spotted animals, and no, they don't. Really, what was happening here, Jacob was just being superstitious, I think. I mean, some people have read from this that he used dye from the sticks and he painted spots on the sheep and everything, but I don't think Laban was stupid enough to go for something like that. So I think he was just superstitious. But the amazing, I mean, he was trying to get an angle any way he could. The amazing thing is that God honored it anyway. The amazing thing is that it worked. But later, we're going to realize, as he talks about, you know, God, what God had told him, that he realized they didn't have speckled sheep because of looking at these colored sticks. It happened because God chose to bless him. And that's what we see throughout the life of Jacob and throughout the life of all of God's chosen people. No matter what they do, no matter how sometimes they try to take shortcuts, God ends up working it out. How in the world would you explain that a guy like Jacob would get the birthright and the blessing that he's supposed to have, even though he got it by stealing, cheating, and lying? How do you explain how Laban conned Jacob into marrying the one that really ultimately was supposed to be his wife, Leah, and where ultimately that messianic line would come through? The fact is, God is in control. And no matter how sneaky people get, no matter how much we try to bend things around, either for him or against him, the fact is, God is always working. God, you know, Romans 8:28, God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God and who are called according to his purpose. And that's the most incredible insurance policy to me. As I look at my life, as I think of some of the things that I do, some of the attempts that I try, some of the struggles that I go through, and I realize, you know what? No matter what someone's trying to do to me, and no matter what I'm trying to do to spite myself, God is working and he will cause it all to work together for good. We have one of the most incredible verses about God's sovereignty in the end of Genesis when Joseph is talking to his brothers. And as he's talking to them, they're in the last chapter of Genesis, and they're understandably a little concerned because they had sold their brother into slavery into Egypt. And he had been there for a long time. Now their dad was dead and they were afraid he was just going to wipe them out. But he said, guys, let me explain something to you. When you plotted against me and when you decided to sell me into slavery, I know you weren't doing it for my own good. Don't sit here and pretend now like, you know, we knew it would work out well for you. And we just, you know, he said, no, you meant it for evil. Everything, the intention of your heart was evil. But he said, but God meant it for good. You know, when I look at, sometimes people are trying to hurt you. Sometimes people are out to destroy you. And this happens a lot if you're working out in the working world and the secular fields, and it's just dog eat dog, and it's, you know, just a constant struggle. And there are people out there who are trying to mess you up. And I love the fact that no matter what they're trying to do, God has a purpose behind what they are doing, and actually to spite them. And it drives them crazy sometimes when it works this way, that as they're trying to do you in, God is using it to bless you. God is using it to lead and guide in your life and work. And, you know, I don't know how many times I've seen God lead me in a way that was just finally afterwards, it was so miraculously obvious that God did it. And I think of the human instruments that were involved, and very often they weren't trying to help me at all. They were trying to hurt me. But God saw it and he goes, I know a great way to work this out. This is going to be funny. Because not only is it going to bless my child, it's going to drive the people that are against me crazy because they thought they could do this and look how it turned around. We're going to see this from Genesis to Revelation, that it doesn't matter what the intentions of the people are who go against God. The people who worship God and are for him are going to see that God's intentions are working in their lives in a way that's amazing.
As a result, let's not worry about the people that are out to get us. We don't need to be paranoid. It says over in Proverbs that the wicked flees when no one pursues, but the righteous are as bold as a lion. The fact is, we have God on our side. We have the kind of God who can make sheep speckled if he wants to. Even with somebody doing some silly, superstitious thing, God can make that work. He's a good God. Laban tries to pull off a stunt, sneaks his daughter in her, and that daughter has a son that will, through his line, will be the Messiah. Through his line will be the greatest kings of all the kings of Israel, and through his line will be the Messiah himself, Jesus Christ. So don't worry. It's not out of control. There's nothing to stress about, because whatever's happening in our lives right now, we know the last chapter. We know how it's going to work out. We understand that God is going to make you win. That's all that can happen. And if he does it through godly people blessing you, or if he does it through ungodly people trying to destroy you, he'll turn it all around and it all works out for his good. As it did for Jacob, so it will for us. I can't believe I went this late and only got two chapters in. But someday we're going to get through Genesis. We'll be starting in chapter 31, right? Did we just finish 30? Yeah. Next week, let's pray. Lord, we thank you so much that you can't be stymied by the nonsense of others, the foolishness of others, the bad will of others, that there's no con man in this world that will con you. You will cause it all to work just the way it's supposed to. And God, frankly, that's about the only way that you can use us most of the time, is by taking our frail attempts and turning them into something beneficial. God, we thank you for sticking with us, loving us. We thank you for your word. As we read it, it's so much more than stories. As we were talking about how sometimes you have to endure things so that you can see yourself. Lord, when we read about these men in the Bible, we see ourselves. They're so much like us. You don't present them with any kind of flowery, exaggerated spiritual holiness, but you show them just the way they are to let us know that you'll use people just like us. And we thank you for